Well, there's a lot of questions there that come into play. If you were to take the non-human intelligence hypothesis and run with it a little bit, then the idea that they do interact with people at some level, perhaps abductions, is not improbable. I mean, would make some kind of sense. But then you have to start worrying about what the implications are and what their intentions are. And that becomes really difficult. And I think that if they are operating, we don't know to what level they interact with humanity and what their intentions are, and are they able to control people's perceptions or desires to study this or desires to cover it up to some degree? I mean, are they, what is the involvement here? What are the interactions? And I think that this whole topic, if the non-human aspects do turn out to be correct, then there's a whole other kettle of fish to worry about.
I am here to discuss the so-called flying saucers.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's.
Did the CIA write Wind of Change by the Scorpions?
As humans busied themselves about the various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied.
Dr. Loeb, what percentage chance do you give it that you have indeed uncovered extraterrestrial or non-human technology?
With infinite complacence, people went about their affairs, yet across an immense ethereal gulf, intellects vast and unsympathetic drew their plans against us.
Prior to your abduction, did you believe in UFOs or any sort of alien life form?
All things unexplained.
So some of that, I think, sir, we'll save for closed session.
Hello, all you unexplained ones, and welcome back to All Things Unexplained. My name is Dr. Mounce. I'm an author, a narrator, a professor, and a podcaster. Shout out to Smitty and CJ who could not join us. And I also want to give a special shout out to everybody in the chat right now. Thank you so much for joining us early. You can all help us by hitting that subscribe button down below, by making sure to comment on this video, making sure to hit the like button, and please make sure to share this video. When you do that, it really helps us defeat the evil algorithms that are trying to prevent disclosure. So again, shout out to all the listeners in the chat, everybody watching the video. You're here to see special guest Kevin Knuth, a renowned physicist and researcher. You might recognize him from his appearance on television shows like Encounters and A Tear in the Sky, where he explored mysteries beyond our understanding. Dr. Knuth is also a key figure in UAPX, the organization dedicated to unraveling the secrets of unidentified aerial phenomenon. Everybody, please welcome Professor Kevin Knuth to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, I think this would be a great time to get your reaction to an interview that Dr. Kirkpatrick did soon after his exit from Arrow, in which he addressed the fact that the Nimitz encounter with the Tic Tacs was not in the Arrow report. Let's have a listen. This comes to us via Mike Colangelo on Twitter.
I testified multiple times on the fact that Tic Tac, there's some great eyewitness accounts of what is described as the Tic Tac. What was lacking is data, right? So I worked with one of the pilots to try to get to tease out a little bit more of the what exactly was it that we were potentially witnessing. And by the descriptions of everything from water to water disturbance to motion, relative motion, and how you can maybe see what you're seeing. Unfortunately, what's going to happen is, I think that one My opinion is that one is going to remain unresolved because there is no data. There is no radar data. Allegations of, you know, the secret black helicopter that came and picked up the tapes. None of that happened. There's no evidence that somebody pulled the tapes off. What does happen, and this is why we had to change the data retention policy, was all of these platforms have fixed storage or fixed amount of storage, and they only retain the data for any given mission, you know, maybe a day, and unless there is a problem with the platform that they use the data for diagnostics for. And then the next time that platform goes out, the data is overwritten. So there's no conspiracy in that. That's just how the military operates with these data tapes and whatnot. So we did write new policy that said, hey, look, if you're reporting a UAP, you have to save all of that data and transmit it to Aero within some period of time. So I think the Tic Tac is so far back in time, there's no data. We went and looked for all the data. But the other thing that we, you know, I asked around a bit, which I don't know, it certainly hadn't been answered by the time I left, was, you know, there wasn't a lot of asking or questioning of other activities that might have been going on at the time, either naval activities or adversary activities. And both of those needed to be explored at that time, because records of when tests, for example, were done that far back in time may not be accurate or exist. And records of any adversary activity, you know, will be hard to track down for exact date and timestamps, right? And those are the kinds of things that you want to get.
You know, it's hard to disagree with a lot of that. I think his statement that the black helicopter that took all the data is, and that just saying that didn't happen, I think is extremely questionable, considering that people on the Nimitz said it happened. And I know some of these people. And some of those people had something to do with the data. So they said, I mean, there is no data that's the problem. There's no data. And whether the data was taken, whether it was on a short-term storage, at this point, it doesn't matter. There's no data. So we have to, you either take the word of the radar operator in describing what he saw, and that would be Senior Chief Kevin Day or Gary Voorhees, who worked with the SPY-1 radar system and worked on the reconstructions of what happened and described what they saw. I trust them, and I trust what they describe. And I trust Fravor when he says that this thing shot off like a bullet out of a gun. It was gone within 2 seconds. We did the calculation on how fast it would have had to accelerate for that to happen as well. And in all the cases that we looked at, you know, the verbal description from Kevin Day about the objects dropping from 28,000 feet to sea level in 0.78 seconds, the object disappearing from view in less than 2 seconds from Fravor, and the actual video, all of them showed abnormally high accelerations.
They ignore qualitative data. So data from eyewitness accounts.
I mean, he's a physicist, and physicists want hard data. I don't think you can ignore it. I think he's choosing to ignore it. That's the problem. I mean, the data also exists for the Japanese airline case, JAL 1628, and Dr. Daniel Kumbe, who was at the Niels Bohr Institute, analyzed that in detail. In my paper, we only analyzed the summary of what was described. Daniel Kumbe took it a step further, actually got the radar data and analyzed that and found accelerations of the large walnut-shaped craft, which was described by the pilot to be 3 747s in length, which is about the size of an aircraft carrier. Dr. Kumbe found that that thing was several instances accelerating up to 9,000 Gs with a top speed of 250,000 miles an hour. The 250,000 miles an hour will put you, that can get you to the moon in less than, in about 50 minutes, 50 minutes. You could go to the moon and have lunch and come back easily and at those speeds and accelerations. At some point you don't know what to say anymore. And you know, we're going to ignore Hermann Oberth's claim about these things moving at 19 kilometers a second back in 1954. He said there were at least 50 radar records of that. Where are all these records? I mean, who has them? That's an important question.
One of the many things that bothered me about the Aero Report was that it just completely ignored the intimidation and the trauma that so many of these military personnel with the Nimitz and or the Princeton had to deal with. For example, Kevin Day and others, this literally was a traumatizing event that changed their lives. For some of them, it ruined their lives. And to just simply call this prosaic phenomenon for which there's no data and nothing really to see, it really does a disservice to these folks who were deeply affected by what they experienced.
It all gets hard to explain, right? If you're just going to believe the Pentagon and Arrow, then it gets hard to explain. I think the prosaic explanation here is that they are not telling the truth. They're not. They're either not telling the truth or purposefully or just trying not to do their jobs. And I think that's a problem. When 97% of the cases are clearly, you know, easily explained, and you focus on 5% of those and talk about them, and you ignore that other 3%, yeah, it all looks silly. Exactly.
Dr. Knuth, one thing you did recently that drew a lot of praise was your presentation at the Soul Foundation.
Oh, thank you.
And I watched your presentation again recently on YouTube. It has over 127,000 views.
My God. That's a lot. It's a lot.
Three of the things that really drew my attention from your presentation was the mention of USOs, unidentified submersed objects or submersible objects, so underwater, handheld nuclear reactors. So you have a friend apparently that's working on a new invention for a handheld nuclear reactor to attract UFOs, and the potential for some upcoming field expeditions.
Right. Yeah, I did talk about USOs, and I have a little more information about that case from New Zealand that I'm now looking at in some detail. I mentioned that my colleague was working toward designing a new type of nuclear reactor, which he's now done some tests and it actually works. This big, pretty cool. But we don't really have plans. It was inspired by an idea at lunch where, you know, it would be cool to use a nuclear reactor to try to lure in UFOs. It would not be safe to do this. You can't just run around with a nuclear reactor. I'm a professional physicist and I know better, and he knows better, and he's designed this, you know, Matthew Shadagas has designed this, and, you know, under, you know, with the university's approval, and he's followed all the safety procedures, and he's done a very nice job, very professional, and he's getting it patented. So it's a big deal. It's a really cool invention, and I, you know, wish him the best in getting it all working. I would love to use one if I could. I mean, the one that's this big, I think could conceivably power a house for 1 million years. So, I mean, this is very possibly transformative. It's a big deal. And then let's see, field expeditions. Yeah, I'd love to do more field expeditions. I recently went to visit the Tedesco brothers, who are working on Long Island. They put a book out on Amazon called Nightcrawler about some of their studies of UAPs off the coast of Long Island. And I went observing for 2 nights with them about 2 weeks ago, which was great fun. I got to see their equipment, and we talked about equipment, and we didn't see anything, of course, but because you never do. Right? It's actually hard to, you, it takes some persistence, and they have a lot of energy and a lot of persistence, and I got to give them a lot of credit for that. That's pretty fantastic. I got to see some of their videos that they've taken, and some of them are really interesting and compelling. So they have collected some data, and we've talked about working together to some degree and collecting more. So I think I'd love to get some more of my equipment together and go back out with them and do some more observing this spring. That would be great fun.
Dr. Knuth, we have some listener questions for you. This one comes from Eli on YouTube. Jacques Vallée theorizes UAPs could be traveling interdimensionally. Very interesting theory, Eli says. Perhaps UAPs might give the scientific community the opportunity to test those advanced theories. Thoughts?
Yes, that has been proposed. I'm not quite sure what it means to be interdimensional, but there are different ways to look at that. The theoretical work that I've done suggests that there are three dimensions, and that's it, period. And I have a hard time visualizing other dimensions, although there can be other ways to do things other than additional dimensions. And the multiverse is just one example. UAPs, if we could collect some good data on them, we might learn. There's a great number of things that we can probably learn from these objects, and I would very much like to do so.
Okay, so next from Two Jacks on YouTube. This has caused quite a stir on Twitter recently. This is dealing with Professor Simon Holland. If you get a chance before the end, can you ask Dr. Knuth if he has any thoughts on Professor Simon Holland, who states, "We received pictures from other life forms via SETI in 2019.
That I don't know anything about. I'll have to look into that. Thank you for informing me. I'm sorry I can't be more helpful.
So I actually have a question for you myself, Dr. Knuth. And I wonder, you know, there's a phenomenon happening right now where academics and scientists, they're becoming larger than life personalities in this whole UFO phenomenon experience in ufology. So they're literally becoming larger-than-life superstars. So what's your thoughts on this phenomenon?
Yeah, those are real concerns. I worry about that myself, especially after doing the Netflix's Encounters show. I was on episode 3, and I think it turned out very nicely. I'm really happy about it. And thank you. That's very kind of you. I just hope that one person who hasn't watched my soul presentation 127,000 times doesn't decide to watch that 127,000 times. But but I do worry about. And I have filmed for other shows now that will be coming out in the next year. But I do worry about that when I'm on TV, and I. As a physicist, I'm very much an introvert, so it's hard for me to do the television shows, and I find that difficult. I joke. There's always the joke on how do you identify the extroverted physicist? He's the guy looking at the other person's shoes when talking to someone. So I feel that acutely, and I think that's difficult because it. Depending on the shows and the way that we're portrayed in the shows, that can really affect our credibility in the scientific community, I think. And I worry about that. I worked hard in my career and have a lot of credibility, but I don't want to blow it being on a silly TV show if I'm not careful. So I think it's a worrisome thing, but it can be helpful too, because people do need to hear what some of us scientists are thinking about and doing. And, science is very bad at communicating anything, basically. And so having better science communicators is an important thing. And many of the more popular past science communicators really fall short when it comes to this UAP topic. They're somehow UFOs come and UFOs get mentioned and their brains go out the window, and they say silly things, and I think that it's important to talk, you know, frankly and seriously about this topic. It's an important topic, and it's important for a lot of reasons. You know, this is a potentially a national security issue. It's actually a global security issue. These things aren't just natural. There's a global security issue. There's a safety issue when it comes to pilots. And you don't want one of these objects to come flying at the windscreen of a passenger jet when you've got a pilot, you know, with 250 people in the back who are just trying to get home. You know how hard it is. Air travel is hard enough the way it is. I wouldn't want to have to deal with that. And then there are people who encounter these things, who see these things, who aren't, you know, who can't really, you know, who have this fantastic experience and can't really share it without being made fun of. That's hard. And then there is the whole abduction phenomenon, which is not clear that that's nonsense either. I know several people now who have claimed to have been abducted, and it sounds entirely possible. I believe them, and I think that that's an issue too. And so then there are, and some of these people are, have these experiences have been traumatic and have had a huge effect on them in their lives. And to not be believed and not be able to share those experiences with others is really criminal. It's hard. You know, so I'd like to support those people too. And I think I can do that by talking seriously about the topic. And I think that, you know, let's look at the topic. Let's collect data. Let's be skeptical and be careful. And let's see what we can find out. But to just, you know, to write a report and make eighth grade level mistakes and, you know, and then just say there's nothing to see here. It's all nonsense. And there's this culture of nonsense that's been perpetuated, I think is really unfair.
Going back on the abduction phenomenon, you know, abductions are a natural extension of the UFO phenomenon. If we accept that there are these objects, then the next place we go is who's in control of them? And what are these beings in control of them? And what do they want? And what are they taking from us, if anything? What are they doing to us? So what's your thoughts on this natural extension of the abduction phenomenon and the UFO phenomenon in general, a connection between the beings that are actually in control of the craft?
Well, there's a lot of questions there that come into play. If you were to take the non-human intelligence hypothesis and run with it a little bit, then the idea that they do interact with people at some level, perhaps abductions, is not improbable. I mean, would make some kind of sense. But then you have to start worrying about what their hello, Julie. But then you have to start worrying about what the implications are and what their intentions are. And that is really, that becomes really difficult. And I think that if they are operating, we don't know to what level they interact with humanity and what their intentions are. And are they able to control people's perceptions or desires to study this or desires to cover it up to some degree? I mean, are they, what is the involvement here? What are the interactions? And I think that this whole topic, you know, if the non-human aspects do turn out to be correct, then there's a whole other kettle of fish to worry about. Straya, hello. You guys are up early. Thank you. It's kind of you.
We love our fans in Australia. We have more than one group of fans out there. And one of the things I love about our fans in Australia is that they are old school ufologists. In other words, they get out in the field and they look at the skies and they collect data. And that's how they do ufology.
Well, I think we can collect our own data. This is what we're trying to do at UAPX. And my friends and colleagues are trying to do at, you know, in the Galileo project, in the IFEX project in Würzburg, Germany, with Professor Hakan Kayal, and then and Beatrix Villarroyal in the VASCO project. Well, she's looking at old data, old telescope imagery. But I think that, you know, we can collect our own data and we can learn some things. Wow, and it's actually in the early afternoon, and I guess it's late here. I guess it's 11 p.m. here in New York, so yeah, it would be. I lost track of time. I flew in from California yesterday, so I'm still jet-lagged. I have no idea what time it is. I was in Big Sur, and the highway collapsed, and they had to evacuate us. We had to head out by half of the highway washed into the sea down the cliff, and then we had to be evacuated by convoy. It was quite exciting. Yeah.
Was that a landslide?
No. I don't know what caused it. Yeah, there was a landslide, but part of the highway cut along the cliff and had supports under it. And then, but that whole lane fell into the ocean. And then, so then they closed off the highway and they had a convoy. They had assessed the safety and they had a convoy head north to get out of the Big Sur area by just driving in that lane. But it was all well controlled. So nobody else went into the ocean.
Well, we sure are glad you made it back okay.
Well, thank you.
We can't thank you enough for joining us on the show tonight. You're so generous with your time. We really appreciate you, Dr. Knuth.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Shout out to Smitty and CJ, who cannot be with us tonight.
Yeah, I'm sorry CJ couldn't join us. Hello, CJ. We missed you.
One thing I would like to ask all the listeners, if you want to help us out, make sure to subscribe, comment, like, and share. It really helps us defeat the evil algorithms that are trying to prevent disclosure. You can also head over to our website at BigfootUFO.com, and you'll find lots of ways that you can support the show there. Dr. Knuth, what are your final thoughts?
Be skeptical. Be equally skeptical of people who tell you fantastical things as you, and be that same skepticism should be directed toward, you know, Kirkpatrick and Arrow and others. They need to provide evidence too. We need evidence. We need evidence because we need to figure out what's going on for real and get past this. As you were describing, the people in Australia collecting, you know, data from the skies. Do it, please. Yeah, collect information. Multiple cameras simultaneously so you can triangulate. Let's find out what's going on. And we can, I'm convinced that once we get several scientific groups out there collecting data, it won't take us more than 20 years to figure out what's going on. We can solve this. This is solvable. It's knowable. It's understandable.
The truth is out there. And folks like Dr. Kevin Knuth are going to lead the way in finding the truth. He's putting in work. He's getting out in the field. He's doing legitimate science to pursue the truth of the UFO phenomenon. And we really appreciate him for doing it. Thanks to all the listeners out there. We really appreciate you. Remember, you can subscribe, comment, like, and share to really help us out. Or visit BigfootUFO.com for lots of ways to help us out. On behalf of Smitty and CJ, I am Dr. Mounts with All Things Unexplained, and here are my final thoughts. There was a time not that long ago where everyone around the globe believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. And thanks to scientists like Dr. Knuth, who were dedicated in their pursuit of the truth, no matter the cost, no matter the dangers, society was able to move forward. And we are very much in that same situation right now, and it's going to take all of us, citizens and scientists alike, to get off our screens, head out in the woods, look up at the sky, and see what's out there. The truth is still out there. Folks, if you get out in the woods, look up at the sky, like someone told us recently, you might find more than UFOs. You might find a little bit more of yourself. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
All Things Unexplained.
What's your hot take on Travis Taylor?
I've got an exclusive for you guys if you want it about the Alaska.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Dr. Taylor was revealed to be the chief scientist of the UAP task force with the Pentagon.
So some of that, I think, sir, we'll save for post-session.